We have people from all over the world logging in tonight. Tony and Martha should be listening. Hello, Tony and Martha in Australia. It's Saturday morning there. Also in New Zealand, it's Saturday morning. And we have people listening on the West Coast and in Canada. And I want to thank Dan Wolf, who is one of our employees who helps us set this up. And we've made some changes to the streaming so that we shouldn't block out like we did last Saturday that we streamed. We changed some settings. And by the next time we have meetings, we'll have a broader internet connection, which will help us. So hopefully everyone can see the picture and they can hear us. And then I also want to give a special thank you to a friend of mine who I've known for years, and we recently reconnected. The relationship was never lost. It just was quiet for a while. But I'd like to welcome Alex Cohen, who was a good friend of mine in Union Life. And we reconnected a few weeks ago, and we've had wonderful conversations about this truth and about what we're sharing. And so, the name of the series this weekend is Called Out of Darkness. And there's a primary verse we're going to use for each lesson, which is 1 Peter 2, 9 through 11. And we're going to be mostly using 1 Peter 2, 9 and 10. We're going to really focus in on this passage tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., which is 2 a.m. in Australia. So if those of you in Australia aren't web streaming live, we'll forgive you. If you want to set your alarm and get up at 2 a.m., you can certainly do that. I know, though, with Tony, he has to share Sunday morning. So in the morning, we'll be streaming live in Australia Sunday morning at 2 a.m. And then at 5 a.m. in New Zealand. So we're glad you're here, and I'm sure tonight we'll understand more about who we are and who God is. And so in 1 Peter 2, starting in verse 9, it says, "But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and holy nation." Then he says, "A peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people." Interesting. In time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Now, when you read that verse, and we're going to really get into it in detail tomorrow, but that verse says a lot about who we are, a lot more than you can see on the surface. Because when we read Scripture, we always initially respond literally to what the words say. And we have to realize that there are some truths that as we grow, we need to use those truths to filter what we're reading. And those of you who may be new to this teaching, we must first realize that we have a Father whom we've called God, who we now call Father, who judges no man. And all through Scripture, it's talking about a people who didn't know the true God, who believed in a God that rewarded and punished, who believed in a God that did things for them, who believed in a God who performed tricks for them, like a vending machine. And really, it says clearly the people worshiped Moses, that they never knew the real God, they never knew the true God, that they worshiped Moses. And it referred to that ministry in the time of Moses. You can look clearly in Hebrews and see it referred to it as a ministry of death. A ministry of death. And in Corinthians it says that, and it says that because it said the law was given that sin may abound. And so the law was given to a people. Of course they were unruly. There's no question about it. But they were a people who didn't know who they were. And it says here in 1 Peter, in these times past, they were not a people. Not a people. This is an identity statement that we're going to get into deeper again tomorrow. But they were not a people. They didn't know who they were. So tonight, we want to understand some of the truths that are in this passage, as well as some others. And we're going to talk more about the main verse from last time. But first, I want to ask you why you're here, or why you might be listening tonight. And maybe it's because you'd like me to tell you something that would make you feel better. Or maybe you'd like to feel less guilty. Or you want to be less worried. Or maybe you want to hear something that makes you feel forgiven or accepted to a greater degree. And there might be many more descriptions that might have more details or even be more specific than these general desires. But all of these desires and feelings are experiences that you feel inside the tomb of your own mind. And in Matthew, your man said he cried out from within the tomb day and night and cutting himself with sharp stones. Day and night. And we know his name was called Legion. So I want to review a little bit just about where we were back in October from the series called The Kingdom Within as we move into this next lesson this weekend with a fresh look at where we left off so we can obtain more clarity about how to really live within this kingdom that's within you. And so we want to go back and read the passage that Linda Waring had sent us, because it has very interesting wording within this passage, and I explained to you why I thought that was, and I still believe that to be true, and that is that the books that are within the Catholic canon that are in between the Old Testament and New weren't messed around with very much by man. They seem to be more preserved in their truth. And so I find in these passages, and I find even in some of the other non-canonical books, that there's great truth in them. And so Linda shared with us a Psalm 23 that came from the Thanksgiving Psalms. And we need to read that again because I want to point out some things that we didn't say too much last time. And it says, "Your Holy Spirit illuminates the dark places of the heart of your servant with the light like the sun. I look to the covenants made by men, that they're worthless. Only your truth shines, and those who love it are wise and walk in the glow of your light. From darkness you raise hearts. Let light shine on your servant. Your light is everlasting." Now, as we spent quite a bit, we spent two lessons in October talking about the darkness. And we all have a religious tendency to deny the darkness, to say that it's been expunged by Christ, that it no longer exists. And that's not true. Darkness, in and of itself, is an illusion and is solely dependent upon your belief system. It has nothing to do with what Christ did for you. Nothing to do with it. It has nothing to do with atonement, sacrifice, or any vicarious substitution. It doesn't eliminate your darkness. And so Jesus came for a specific reason, and that is to walk us out of the darkness. He didn't come to die for us, he came to die as us. And we must follow in those footsteps. Paul said, "I must die daily." Die daily to what? Die daily to what? And I find it very interesting, and even in the passages in Psalms, that he called those who, it says, were dwelling in the dark places servants. Servants of God. Now that makes no sense to religiosity. That makes no sense to someone who has said we've been endowed with righteousness. Right? But we're learning and understanding that righteousness is a judgment. It's a declaration. It's not a salve that we just rub on and then we're just righteous. Righteousness is, again, something you must understand in order to be set free from the darkness. And you can only discover this in the darkness. You can't discover it anywhere else. You can't just say, "Oh, I'm in the light, and so now you're going to understand truth." Because you don't know what the light means if you say that. You don't know what the light is. And I have a witness, because I have some people that are listening, that are sharing with us. And I found it very powerful, what they've said, what they've experienced from our lessons back in October. And we have just a lovely lady and who is listening tonight and who really is surrounded by circumstances that are extremely difficult. Extremely difficult. These are dark places. It doesn't mean they're in us. They're places. A dark place, there's many descriptions about these dark places, but one of them is, it's just a place where we can't see God. It's just a place where you can't see God. That's the beginning of it. In this dark place, you don't think a God exists, and so you cry out to Him out of your tomb, asking Him for help. You cry out to Him, out there somewhere. You think He doesn't know what's going on, and that's right, He doesn't. He doesn't know anything about it. And so Miranda and I have been communicating a little bit, and I have to share with you some of the things that she said. Because she talks about the necessity of darkness. Now, listen, if we don't get into the explanations of this, please bear with me, okay? By the time we're done tomorrow, you'll understand why the darkness are treasures. So what is it that makes us opposed to the word darkness and hell and destruction? Why are we so offended by these words? Well, it's just a religious spirit that's offended by them, right? It's a denial that they're real. And they're very real in this world. Well, how will we escape if we just deny them? How can we escape and just say, well, they're not here? And so Miranda said, "Dear Mike and Diane, I have just finished listening to the video, The Fear of Death, and I was compelled to write to say how strongly the truth of this message spoke to me. I see it exactly as you do, that we must enter the darkness to experience the nothingness of the ego." That's wonderful. That's great truth. She's living this. She wrote this to me. And when I read it, I could feel the truth. I feel it now as I read it. We must enter the darkness. Well, we're going to find out later on that we've been doing just the opposite. And Joel has a wonderful, wonderful teaching on this called Problems Aren't Problems Anymore. It has nothing to do with getting rid of them. It has nothing to do with expunging tribulation. Nothing to do with it, which is what we try to do every day. We try to run from the darkness. Here, Miranda is saying we must enter the darkness to experience the nothingness of the ego. Then she says, in parentheses, "though it sure tries to convince me through my senses that it is real, yikes." Pretty cute. "In the midst of this apparent storm, I am experiencing peace." She's surrounded by darkness now, okay? I'm telling you. I'm not going to get into the details of what's going on down there within this cloud of darkness that she's in the middle of. It's immaterial. It has nothing to do with this. "I'm experiencing peace in the midst of this apparent storm." Well, where was Jesus when the storm was going on the lake in the boat? Where was he? Where was his mind at? Perfect peace, lying flat on his back in the bottom of the boat. And his two buddies were out there yapping their brains out, "We're going to die, we're going to die, we're going to die." Right? Jesus knew nobody was going to die. And yet we get all hung up on him coming up out of the boat and calming the storm. That's the only thing we get out of the story. And so we teach that we can sit and have a seance and control the weather. That's what we get out of it. And that's just foolishness. We're no different than the two men in the boat. Trying to control the weather? That's not what the story's about at all. The story is about the fact that Christ was not disturbed in the middle of the storm. Oh. "Judge not by appearance, but judge righteous judgment." It sounds like that applies, doesn't it? It always applies. It is the key to hell and destruction. So she said, "In the midst of this apparent storm, I'm experiencing peace. I can't recall going through anything more difficult in my life. And these video messages help me immensely. I thank God for the dedication that you have to Him alone as everything. Love, Miranda." Now, I want to read her whole email because she wrote it, and I don't want to change it. It's not about me. I appreciate her loving comments, but it's not about me. It's about what she's saying. these phrases, we must enter the darkness to experience the nothingness of the ego. Well, that could be something you could meditate on for months. Just that phrase. Just that one phrase. What can I find in the darkness that teaches me? And I remember Karen, who owns the Cuckoo. I don't know if Karen, if you're listening. But I remember when I was over there sharing at the seminar last February, there was a little bit of trouble with one of my brothers. And when brothers are together, there's always something bubbling, you know. Starting to get a kick out of it more than I am frustration. But I remember she said, your brother's a teacher, in her German accent from the back. Your brother, Michael, your brother's your teacher. And while I was sharing, her words calmed me down. These words encourage me. They're no different than mine. These words teach us, and we need to hear this. And so I'm so thankful for the responses of people that are listening that help shape the messages, because those that are listening form the messages that we need to hear. It's hard for the darkness to be exposed when we're promoting it. It's hard to tell someone that they're trying to bring peace into this world, that while they're trying to bring peace into this world, that they're promoting the darkness. Promoting it. It's hard to tell someone that we are, when we're seeking anything in this world, we're promoting the darkness. Well, how can we ever escape if we're out there selling it like some kind of religious trick? How are we ever going to escape it when we're promoting it? And we call it truth. It needs to be exposed for what it is. We need to recognize it, but that's not promoting it. That's understanding, where am I? What do I want today? What is it that I want today? What am I looking for? And we read it earlier. You want to feel better. You want to feel less guilty. You want to be less worried, or you want to be more forgiven, or you're short of cash, or you've got health issues. And we can sympathize with you till we're blue in the face. It's not going to make it better. But in all this, we're just really complaining and promoting and exasperating our own darkness. We won't admit there's darkness in us. We won't admit that we're believing in darkness. We won't admit that. And we don't really know what it is. That's part of the problem. It's just ignorance. But when ignorance boasts, it becomes arrogance. When ignorance starts to talk, it's arrogance. When ignorance talks, it's arrogance. I know what I'm doing. We know what we're doing. It's okay. All is well. You know, and it's probably not all as well when someone's surrounded by darkness. I don't think Miranda is going to say all is well all the time. She shared with us, and we're going to share another testimony in a second, where we're finding out people now are coming forth to share their darkness experiences so they can find truth in them. And that does not make sense to this mind that's been formed by religion for now, even since Christ has been, in over 2,000 years of religiosity. That statement makes no sense to us. We deny it. We deny that value could be found in darkness because we spent all our lives trying to get rid of it, running from it. So some say there is no darkness. That's because they don't know what it is. The darkness is very real to someone who's in it. It's very real. Now, we know it's an illusion. But if we could just say it's an illusion, how does that help anyone? How does it help anyone just to say it's an illusion? It's true. It is illusion. It's true the darkness is the absence of light, and I just said that. It's true that the darkness is someplace God doesn't exist, but we don't understand that when we're in the middle of it. We just don't understand it. So how can we begin to come out of it? How can we begin to identify all the tentacles that spring forth from the mind of man? We call it the octopus. When I talk about the octopus, I'm talking about the mind of man and its legions of tentacles that are connected to this world. Not the world out there, your world. Where are you connected to your world? And we talked last time about that. When it's talking about the world out there, it's our world. Now, you could get 1,000 people in line and ask them to give you a definition of the world, and they'd all be different. So it's talking about your world. Your world. And where are we connected? These places that we're connected, these are the dark places. And if it takes us 10 years, I don't care. We don't want to talk about time because it doesn't matter how long it takes. But until you understand that these tentacles are connected in ways where we're misunderstanding pure wisdom, they'll still be connected. And you can deny them all you want. You can say Jesus did it all, but they're still connected. And when one of them raises its ugly head, you're in fear and you say, why is this happening? Well, that's a good question. So we better find out, shouldn't we, why it's happening? And how do we do that? We don't just say, well, it's happening because we don't understand truth. We say it's happening because we don't understand the connection. The connection can never be broken if we don't understand the connection. That's a dark place that you must become intimate with. And maybe that's the wrong word. Forgive me, to say we must become intimate with darkness. But how can the disconnection ever be made? How can you go over and pull it up with truth and understanding so that there's no more connection unless you know what it is? You got to know what it is. Now, it's interesting, though, that while these people in the Thanksgiving Psalms says the Spirit illuminates us, these dark places of the heart of your servant. These people longed for relationship with the Father, just like you do. I know everyone listening longs for a relationship with the Father. And even in that longing, I find those to be one of the connections. I find the longing to a relationship with the Father to be one of the connections. One of these connections, because it causes us to believe in a remote God. There is no God out there. There is no remote God that's going to do something for you. And anyway, that scares us. That causes us to think that what's going on in the world's out of control. And I'd say that it's pretty out of control on its own. I don't think it's going to make it worse because we expose it for what it is. Okay? You will never, ever find peace in this world. Ever. Ever. And so that's one thing you can stop trying to do. There's no kingdom that's going to be established on this earth. And we went over that last time, that the kingdom comes by observation. So we must know the darkness to escape, to loosen the tentacle, to say, oh, that's not real. We can't just put the legions of them all in one basket and say they're all not real, but still we're connected. Still the suction cups on the leg of the octopus is hard fast. We can't just say it's not there anymore when this or that happens in your life and you say, why is this happening to me? And as soon as you say that, it means you're afraid. It's not any different than what Adam said in the garden. So that's what's so wonderful about talking about the darkness, is people now are sharing some of their darkness experiences. And I wish I could come up with a better word that make your ego feel better, but I'm sorry I can't. Can we just call it for what it is? What it says here? How can we be? Why do we need to be called out of the darkness? Is it something where you raise your hand and walk an aisle in Vacation Bible School? Is that it? No, it's not it. In Matthew it said there were legions. It says, he said, what is your name? And that's the title of the lesson tomorrow. So the lesson title for tonight is called, the series is called Called Out of Darkness, but tonight it's called Understanding the Darkness. Understanding the Darkness. And I want to share with you, in my own life experiences, where I found these connections. And I have shared some with you, and I will continue. And here we have this, Miranda has shared some with hers, and now I want to share another one, again, that teaches us. And I'm not, I don't feel comfortable talking about who this is, because it's so good. And it really teaches what we're talking about. So this person says, thank you, Mike and Diane. I have been in, I want to describe this person to you. This person is keen, is tight, has this, one of the most sensitive spirits, the most listening spirits I know. If I were to judge this person, and I could say, who out there listens the closest to what we share, this would be one of them. But I don't even want to do that. I do that to you to say, to show you the contrast here. I want to show you the contrast. This person said, I have been in a dark place for some time now. Now. Waiting. And I rejoice in listening to the truth of the Lord's word through you and being still in the now beside the still waters. I have experienced many of these dark places, and always when it seems like a painful journey of staying with it and knowing from past experience that the nugget, the gold, is indeed revealed. But dear ones, my attachment to past words, memories, is still a journey I persist in returning to. Oh. Now what does that say to you? We're taking a connection and we're reeling it back out like a water hose, and we're taking it back out and we're connecting it again. Aren't we? That's what's being described here. Then this person goes on to say how now, through the truth of the word, I'm seeing the connection. I didn't understand the connection intimately. That's why we go, if we understood the connection intimately, do you think we would go out there and attach it again? Are you going to stick your hand over the burner on the stove more than once or twice? You might do it twice. Now, I shouldn't tell you this experience, but I can tell you there's some things even I myself repeat. And sometimes it's long term. I'm not going to be specific about you, but my wife could tell you. And it's like a 2 year, it's like an every other year thing. Okay? But you know why? I forgot that it's a dark place. That's all. I forgot all about it. But I'll tell you what, when the connection hits the second time, it doesn't take me very long to go out there and rip that puppy off of its connection. Okay? It don't take long. Well, does that make me evil? Does that make me unrighteous? Does that make me unworthy? It has nothing to do with it. It has nothing to do with how God sees me. Nothing at all. But I can enjoy how he sees me when I'm out there grabbing a hold of that thing and I've got a pitchfork and a shovel and I'm trying to scrape the thing up. Well, all I got to do is stop and be still and say, Father, what is my problem? What's my problem? Not what is that problem. What's my problem? What is it? It's right here. See, it's all up here. Right? Here's where all the connections are made. Right here. Every connection that's made is right here. Every one. And so, I'm experiencing peace that is not of this world in wiping out of guilt memories. Isn't that an interesting word? In wiping out of guilt memories. I remember, maybe it was a year ago, where we got the revelation that God doesn't have a memory. And I think that shocks us. But you can't live in the now and have a memory of the past. And it's got nothing, you're not going to get amnesia and forget anybody. Okay, don't worry. Maybe you want to forget them. Right? So, I say again, as these witnesses do, we must understand that the darkness, what the darkness is, or we will never escape it. And this is our goal this weekend, is to have a simple understanding of the great darkness. I'm going to give you some tools, I'm going to give you some definitions that will help you in a general way identify many tentacles, if not all of them. And at least you'll know the right room to go in to find out where the connection's at, right? I want to get you in the right room where this connection is that will help you free yourself from these dark places. Now, we can't be afraid of them, and we can't run from them, and we can't promote them and identify them at the same time. Can't be done. Okay? So, here's one great, great tool. We're back into the Wisdom of Solomon again. One of those Catholic books that I just love. We're into Wisdom of Solomon all the time. And we talked about this verse when we were together the last time. And it's important that we study this verse. This is really the main verse for this evening in this lesson. And in Solomon, the Wisdoms of Solomon, 1917, in the King James, I'm going to read the King James, I'm going to read the Good News Translation, and then I'm going to read the LTWV. That's the Light of the World version. Okay? The modern today translation. And you'll agree with me when we get done with this. You won't disagree with this translation, okay? So it says in 1917, therefore, even with blindness were these stricken, as those were at the doors of the righteous man, when being compassed about with horrible great darkness, everyone sought the passage of his own door. It's a beautiful verse. Now, that doesn't sound very beautiful. But it's a beautiful verse because it gives us a general description of a room where there are many tentacles. It could be all the legions there is could be in that room. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. I don't want to know about it. But I love the way the Good News Translation says it. It says, these people were also struck with blindness. we are struck with blindness. Just like the men of Sodom, who came to the door of that righteous man Lot, this one says they found themselves in total darkness. Hallelujah. They're ahead of the ones in the King James Version, aren't they? There it said they were compassed about with horrible great darkness. But here it says they found themselves in total darkness as each one groped around to find his own door. So what's that like? What kind of picture is that? When you're in darkness, it's either total or there isn't any. Okay? If you're in darkness, you're in darkness. And if you're trying to bring peace into this world, I'm telling you, in that concept, you're in darkness. That's a concept of darkness. Because you're violating the prime directive. If you're trying to bring peace into this world, all you're doing is judging the world and trying to make change in a world that the Father says he's judging in righteousness. But you want to bring peace into a world that's an illusion. That's called great darkness. Hello? You're trying to alter an illusion. That's pretty dark. That's about as dark as it gets, okay? So give that up, all right? They found themselves in total darkness. And because they knew they were in total darkness, they wanted out. They were trying to find a door. But here's why it's called the great darkness. Because they were looking for their own door. Not the door to the kingdom.
Right.
And so how many doors do you think there are in that verse? About 3 billion? Is it 3 billion? How many people are on the earth? Is there 3 billion people on the earth, isn't there? Is there a billion just in China? Everybody's got their own door they're groping for, don't they? I've got my own door I'm groping for, and I'll walk right out of one of these meetings, and I might find myself in a dark place, and I'm groping for a door. It's the frustration that goes on in my world. And folks, I go back into my world at times. I do. We go back into our world, and our definitions of these things are so extreme that we won't even confess them. You know, we don't have any idea what holiness is. We don't have any idea what righteousness is. And I really don't think we understand God correctly. Okay? Because somehow we think he has something to do with it, or is going to have something to do with it, and that's not true. It's quite obvious it's not true. So the question is, how long will it take you to find total darkness? Because how can you come out if you don't find it? You try to smooth it over with religiosity? Is that what you want to do? And say all is well? Even though it's obvious by a testimony that with this person it wasn't? But in our religiosity, people are afraid to be honest. They're afraid. Because there's still so much egocentric understanding mixed in with truth that it just can't be pure. It just isn't pure. And I'm sure even with some of my words that it's not as pure as it could be. But I know we're going in the right direction. Here it says that the definition of total darkness is you groping around for your own door. You trying to bring change into your world. Trying to find peace within the answers to your problems and memories that you embrace from the past. Now here's my translation of these two verses and what it means to me. You can take it or leave it, but this is what it means to me. It says, we're struck with the blindness of our own ego. Just like the men of Sodom, who were so near to their own righteousness, still they found themselves in darkness that was so great they could not navigate their way out, because they were focused on the answers to their own problems and then forced into trying to find the door to their own kingdom. I really just said that. That was my commentary of the verses, but I just translated it into the verse. And I want to read that again. We're struck with the blindness of our own ego. Just like the men of Sodom, who were so near to their own righteousness, yet they found themselves in darkness. They were standing right next to Lot, who represents your righteousness. And if you read the account, there wasn't much about Lot that seemed very righteous. He was the only one, it said. Now, isn't that something? Isn't that an unbelievable description of the verse? He illuminates the hearts of the servants. Lot's heart was illuminated. It's not a picture of a person, it's a picture of your spirit in every man. The righteousness of Lot is your spirit. It's who you are in the midst of the darkness of your own mind. That's what it's talking about. We look at stuff literally and think it's about people crawling around like rats. You know? And that could have been. That could have been. But where's the spiritual meaning to the story? We just going to set up a little pantomime and have a flame come down and consume everybody? We found out in lessons past that we're consumed by the lusts of our own mind, trapped in time. Trapped in time that's passing away. And that life that said was like the Son of Man, when we read in Luke last time, it said it's like a lightning bolt. That life that we give value to, where all the activities are, where all our connections are to this world, it says has a time span of a lightning bolt. And we've placed so much value onto 80, we can't see the darkness. We put so much value on it. And this is where the fear comes from. There's too much value placed on it. Now, it doesn't mean it isn't important. It doesn't mean you're going to go out and start running people over on the sidewalk tomorrow. That's just stupidness. That's foolishness to say such things. No one has a desire to do those things. Not that's listening here. There's no desire to do those things. Let's move up above it. What's going on with the story? What kind of God have we believed in? Don't you think that the concepts we've had are still lingering over today within our understanding? Of course they do. We can't let our egos excuse it away because we think we're walking in the light. I mean, to me, to say to someone, I'm walking in the light, is arrogance. Someone who says they're walking in the light is probably walking in darkness. Because walking in the light isn't something you do. That's why. It's something you see. And you know it. And it starts drawing you. It starts drawing you away while you're in the darkness. While you're in the darkness. So in order to begin to walk toward the light, we must understand the depth of the darkness. How can we ever see the light far off if we're focused on all the problems, all the answers to our problems? How are we ever going to see it? We have to be still and know that there is something else besides finding peace in between pillar and post. There's something else. So, why is it called great darkness? And how great is the darkness? Well, as we read with one of our witnesses that emailed us, it's reached out into 1,000 different areas within our history that they call guilt memories. And we've just forgotten it, because we admire our history and we certainly won't let it go. So there's still lingering, there's still leftovers from believing in a God that we all thought is going to punish people. And if something real crazy happens that seems negative to me, my first reaction is to say something's wrong. Why is this happening? I've said it. Where's that? Where does that come from? Where does that reaction of fear come from? It comes from my history. It comes from a connection to my past. That's where it comes from. So there's still lingerings, there's still leftovers from believing in a God that we thought's going to punish people. Oh, say, oh, you say, I don't believe that stuff. Oh, really? I just stop for a second and don't say anything, because I might have something that might change your mind about that. Because if we don't believe it, then why are we trying to obtain something from this material world? And when I say obtain something, I don't mean just go get something. I'm talking about seeking the answers to your problem like a crazy person. That's what I'm talking about. Or you've got to have something so bad you can't sleep at night. Or you've got a problem that makes you toss and turn all night. Or you've got a problem that's more serious, that has to deal with health. That's pretty great darkness. It's pretty great darkness. But we get consumed by these things. We are consumed by them. Consumed. And we can't see the light. If you're consumed by a problem and the answer to your problem, you are in darkness. It's that simple. And that's, we have to line up with the scripture for it to help us. That's what it calls it, okay? And we just said it's simply a place God does not exist. It's one of the definitions, okay? We're going to get into more detail there. So we believe, or we're still trying to obtain something from this material world, so we still believe to some degree in a God that's going to give us fringe benefits, or that's going to heal us, or it's going to change something in this outer world. And I think I've talked enough about why we struggle so much with healing before, but I'll say it again, and we went over it. If you want to listen to the fear of death from October, we deal with it square on. And if we're struggling at all with health to a degree where we're in fear, it's because we're afraid of death. And what's so wonderful is we found out that the power of death was conquered by Christ when he said he slew Satan, that dragon, Leviathan, the great serpent, which is the mind of man. My mind. How can I be delivered if I don't confess that it's my mind? It's my mind. My mind. It's not your mind. It's my mind. All the things we're talking about, everything we talk about, gets blown out into a universal psyche. It gets blown out into what's called a paradigm shift, away from that original creation of what we are. It's a huge one. And it all starts right here with an idea that's wrong, with an idea that's other than reality. So, we just heard from a very trusted friend who's starting to feel comfortable about sharing about the darkness that they're experiencing. Hallelujah. I'm so excited about that. And while they're sharing, they're talking about how the light is shining on it now. Hello? Hello? That's not coming from me, it's coming from them. So this darkness that they feel, where does it come from? What is it? So we need to realize this Psalm 23 is telling us that there are treasures within the darkness and that they lead us to the light. But we spend all our time trying to get rid of the darkness, trying to change the darkness, trying to adjust the darkness. Well, if you're doing all that, remember, it's like the old monkey joke, you know. You know, the monkey's got his hands covered. I'm not even going to tell the joke now. I remember now, it wasn't, I'm not going to tell it, but the monkey had his hands over his eyes and he was trying to do something and he couldn't do it with his hands over his eyes, okay? Right? So, how are we going to identify the darkness if we're just trying to get rid of it? Or trying to change it, or trying to adjust it, when you can't see. You can't see the light. The only thing that's going to change it is when you begin to see the light. That's all that it takes. And the light, it's right here under my microphone, actually. It's where the light dwells. Isn't that something? This is the distance between the darkness and the light right here. They're living right beside each other. Just like the men that came into Sodom, standing next to the righteousness of God, still groping around for their own door. Here's the distance, right between, it ain't even 2 feet. Distance. And they don't even know each other. So there's got to be a connection. Out of the darkness, I began to see the light within me that doesn't judge by observation, Jesus says. Doesn't judge by observation. So, when problems come that we see are darkness, we need to see them as opportunities. Well, you say, for what, Mike? Jeez. What are you talking about? Opportunities for the light to shine through them. But if we continue to defend our judgment of the appearances, if we continue to defend those things that hold us down, how will we ever begin to see the light? So this light, if we're going to go back and study some biblical history, just humor me for a minute, as we travel back in time. I know that's a word we're trying to move beyond, but let's just humor me and let's just do it. It was interesting that we need to understand the light that was first seen hovering over the birth of Christ. This is a great time to do that. It's a good positive experience about the birth of Christ when he entered into hell. Yet there was a light shining far off. It was a star that the wise men looked up to for guidance. Isn't that interesting? It was a bright light in the middle of the darkness. Hello? It was a bright light that was in the middle of the darkness, and it guided them over where the Christ child was born. And so, in a sense, when we begin to understand the value of the darkness that surrounded this one bright light, and we think it's bright, it wasn't bright like the sun, not yet. It wasn't there yet, was it? But it guided their consciousness to that birth of knowing that Christ lives within us. This is the birth of Christ. This is what the birth of Christ represents. It was the beginning of Christ being manifest in our life. And how are we ever going to know this? We're going to be in the darkness when we find it out. That's when we're first going to hear about it. And this light guided them, it says. And it guided them just enough to what? Find their way in the darkness. It's identical to the verses we just read. Exactly, an exact description that the Holy Spirit illuminates the hearts of the darkness of your servant. And how much does it illuminate? It doesn't even matter. But as it begins to illuminate, it's caught our attention. And we begin to follow it. This connection is simply the understanding of our righteousness. It's the connection that's made. But it's interesting to see, we read the same story. In the middle of a darkness was a bright light, yet we've only focused on the light and only understood the Christ child as an icon and not really understood why he came. And we almost believe he didn't mess his diapers, you know. I mean, it's a little ridiculous, but the way the Catholic Church worships him, I mean, he probably didn't even poop his pants, you know, which is crazy. But what's interesting is the star was way off in the distance. Way off in the distance, and it drew them to it. Barely illuminated a place to walk, but at least it illuminated a place to walk, didn't it? It guided them to the Savior. This is what the story is about. This man would guide us towards this star. This Christ child would guide us towards this star of pure light. And you only need a taste of this understanding to begin to walk towards the light. We don't understand that we walk toward the light while we're in the darkness, because we're spending so much time trying to get rid of the darkness, we cannot see the light. But the wise men saw the light. The wise men saw the light. From darkness you raise hearts. The Holy Spirit illuminates the dark places of the heart of your servant. Well, they have to know about it. They have to see the light. that shines like the sun. Now, a star light shines like the sun. It isn't as bright, but it still shines like the sun. It's just not as bright as the sun. But where's the sun? Right here. The sun's right here. And so, first we need to realize, this is the main focus for tonight, that problems, what we call darkness, need to be looked at as opportunities. Opportunities for what, you say? To let the light shine through. Or to let the light shine on them. The only thing you can do, there's only one thing man can do, right? Because there's really no such thing as a human being. But there is one thing man can do. He can manage the darkness. He's a pretty good manager of darkness, okay? That's the only qualities that a man can do, is manage darkness. And that's all you can do, and you've been doing it your whole life. You've been trying to manage the darkness, and that's why you have found no permanent answers. And we're going to talk about this more tomorrow. I want to close with just a couple more comments. Don't be afraid of the darkness. You don't have to confess or write to everybody. I'm not talking about going out and making it right with everybody you've offended. I'm talking about this right here. This right here. The concepts that you have about trying to draw and pull in opportunities into your kingdom that you call life. Opportunities for success, opportunities for answers to difficulties. All these opportunities need to be turned inside out and seen as opportunities for the light to shine. The light can't shine on something that we say doesn't exist. This is why the darkness is so great. And I recall even a discussion that Alex and I had years ago about the book, The Bondage of the Will, and Martin Luther's great diatribe, and how he and Erasmus were arguing about whether man had a free will. And it's a great debate still today, because men still argue about it. And it's interesting that they're arguing about what man can do or what man should do when Jesus said, I can do nothing. Jesus said, the flesh profiteth nothing. The flesh profiteth nothing. If you think man has a free will, you are deep, deep, deep in darkness. You're focusing on a phantom. And here's where I'm going to bury that concept. There is no such thing as man, as you know it. This man that you think has a free will doesn't even exist. The only power he has is to manage darkness. That's the only power he has. And as we've talked about in the past, it's like shadow boxing. And you throw such a big punch that you throw both elbows out, because there's nothing there to give any resistance even. The darkness is so great. And I remember getting the revelation of this back when I was with Tony almost 3 years ago, when I just knew. I remember walking in the woods not too far from here after reading that book of Martin Luther and saying, God, if I'm the only one that agrees with this, I will never say I do anything that ever controls you in any way. There's no way that I will ever say that, ever again, that I make a decision for Christ or that I choose Christ or all of this nonsense that we've taught, or even to believe that we could do something that would give us some kind of blessing. That we, if we understood truth, we would get blessing, or we would get fringe benefits. It's not any different. They're all the same, because we believe in a God that rewards and punishes based on something I do. And it says the best you could do is that you're in total darkness groping for your own door. Hello. That's the best you can do. And that's all you can do, is manage your total darkness trying to find a door that doesn't exist. I think you should want that exposed. There's a great treasure. Righteousness is right at your shoulder. I love the way the Infinite Ways say it. It's closer than breathing, nearer than hands and feet. Righteousness. It's just on the other side of all the answers to your dilemmas in your life. And you'll never see the answers if you can't get your mind off your... If you can't let go of your answer to this problem you've got, you'll never see the light. At any level. At any level. I mean, if you were a wise man back then and you just left all and went out into the wilderness and all you saw was this one bright light, that's sort of a gamble, isn't it? That's quite a gamble to leave everything and just follow this light somewhere. It's time to be still. And tonight, whatever it is that's troubling you, your problem is you're seeking an answer to whatever's troubling you. It's not the trouble. There's nothing wrong with trouble. Anyone that says that you shouldn't have tribulation in your life doesn't understand what we're talking about. Tribulation surrounds you in this world, and that will never change. But what if in the midst of all of it you found peace, like Miranda said to us? I wished I could share with you all the things she's going through. But whatever you're experiencing, I can tell you right now, it's nothing any worse than what she's going through. I'll just tell you that right now. And we heard her testimony. She's found peace in the midst of this cloud of darkness. It's still around her, I'm telling you. It's still around her. If I judge by appearances and by what's being described, it's still around her. But something's happening in the middle of the darkness. Something's happening. Peace is coming forth. A light is shining that's producing peace. And that same truth can apply to everyone if we let go of the answer to the problem we're seeking right now. That's the only place that you're going to find peace. That's the only place where you can say all is well. You can't wait for your circumstance to get better, because there'll be another one. And another one. And another one. And I don't want to live a life that goes from an answer to a circumstance to an answer to a circumstance to an answer to a circumstance. That's not living, it's dying. I don't want to live that kind of life. So we're going to find more answers about this tomorrow at 10 a.m., 2 a.m., Australia time. If you want to join us, that'd be pretty exciting. So those of you here on the East Coast will be back at 10 a.m. in the morning. So thank you, and we'll see you in the morning.